From Australia, this is Bondi Tune. Henry
O'Donovan. This is Bondi Tunes International Broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry on Bondi Beach in Sydney, where there's current flooding going on around the whole eastern seaboard of Australia. And we're copping it big time here. Not so in Texas, where I'm joined by our correspondent there, Thomas Booker, in San Antonio de Bayo. Thomas, welcome to the broadcast.
My pleasure.
How's the
nice
weather?
Nice to be back.
How's the weather?
It is right now. It's cool. It's kind of the spring air. It's a little bit humid. Very cool. Cool in the mornings. Clear skies, but kind of it's just this intermediate thing where it's not quite winter anymore. The sky is cool. And it's not quite summer that's going to be coming on us. So we're in this intermediate point.
It's the no man's land of weather.
It is no man's
land. Of weather.
Yes. Very good. So,
I thought, Thomas, I thought we'd have a light discussion about something small. How about the cosmos?
Why not? Yeah.
By the way, we were talking off air. I know that you've been meeting up with your family, your children, your grandchildren, and you've all got injections for the COVID thing, and you found some mysterious artwork on your back porch. What's going on?
Yes. Well, we gave them their chalk and everything, and we had the grandchildren over. This was a big deal because this is our first get together. In 9 months, say 10 months. It was the previous one was really stilted because we were keeping distances.
Yes.
But we had a nice big blowout. We had a barbecue. We did some serious steaks, corn on the cob on the grill, and boiled some crab legs, and it was just a real big feast. We stuffed ourselves. And the grandchildren had the opportunity to go out in the backyard and run around in the open air and play. And it was apparently because they had been more or less confined in their house for so long, doing virtual classes and Zooming and all this other crap instead of just being able to go to school.
all this other crap. Do they live nearby? Or?
Yes, very very nearby. But we've kept our distances because of the, we've self isolated, and so now my kids have gotten their, my kid and daughter in law have gotten their vaccines. And we are vaccinated, so we decided, it looks like it was okay to let us go ahead and open up the house and have a family get together, which was a big deal. And so it was a very pleasant afternoon.
And you had a barbecue, you say. Did you have any beers?
Did you have
any beers?
Yes, that does. Yeah, I understand that, Henry. Yeah, hang on a second. With the floods you've been going through. There, how's that?
Oh, fantastic. It's 1:35 in the afternoon in Sydney, and it's sometime around heading on for 10 o'clock, is it, in the evening Texas?
Yeah, it's good for us to have a proper chat. Yeah, we're looking at, close to 10. It's close to 10 o'clock. It's very good.
Well, I can have a beer in the afternoon. Why not? It's pouring right
sure,
outside.
Well, that's when I started, yeah. So what's the flooding going on? I mean, how bad is it? Is it still raining?
The east coast of Australia, well, it's from the Queensland border right down to the southern border of New South Wales. And Sydney's sort of in the middle of those two distances. And it's pretty bad. I mean, they were showing video footage of a house floating down a street, which had turned into a river. A kangaroo desperately swimming in floods. Kangaroos don't normally swim, but it actually managed to make it to the bank. We've seen some dreadful stories. It's making global news, actually. BBC reporting extensively. Do you hear about that there?
Oh yes. Western Australia is having some issues, very bad. Yes, and it's made it to our public radio and torrential rains. And
are you saying that it's not on Fox News?
No, no. Well, It was on actually National Public Radio.
NPR. I love it.
Yes.
Now listen, we were having a bit of a chat off air about the cosmos.
Yes.
You're a scientific type. Where do we start with this?
Well, what I would like to suggest, I've actually the other day on a whim, I opened up some Sky at Night software, some interesting scar patterns. I'm extremely jealous of Australia and south of the equator, because you guys, if you could ever go at the present time, this time of year, if you went out to a dark location in Australia, you found some place that was just absolutely pitch black and were able to look southward, you would be able to see very brilliantly in your sky the Milky Way, the galaxy that we're in.
Yeah.
But if you look off to the right, to the lower right of the galaxy, you'll see these two whiffs of appear to be clouds. As a matter of fact, they were identified as the Magellanic Clouds. Ferdinand Magellan, who insisted they were clouds, but it turns out they were celestial objects. But our galaxy has two mini galaxies that are companions, two stars off. And you can actually go in Australia and look off to the side of that and see those in detail, pretty much detail, along with the galaxy. It's a kind of a cool sight, because all of a sudden you get some perspective that you're looking from our galaxy and you're actually seeing two companion galaxies off in the distance.
When you say companion galaxies, are they similar to our galaxy?
They are similar, but they're much, much smaller. Oh. And as a matter of fact, I think it was in one of the Magellanic Clouds that somebody recently observed. Back in 1987, there was a supernova observed. I don't know if it was in one of the Magellanic Clouds or not. I have to go look at that. Hmm. But the bottom line is, if you guys have the opportunity to see some really magnificent sky views, celestial views.
Yeah.
You know, if you go hang there. So I would. And also, I guess you're getting into autumn, or you're getting into your fall, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah. And the air should be getting clearer and crispier, I would
think. You know what, Thomas? I went to the Red Center, Ayers Rock, known as Uluru.
Yes.
And really, you know, you need to get out of the cities to see the sky at night and to see the stars. It's just so different. I mean, you can just see much more clearly.
Yes.
It's interesting that you say that we have a different angle on space from this part of the planet Earth.
Yes.
I get a bit confused about this, because I thought we all sort of saw the same thing at your night time. You'd see the same thing as our night time in terms of space, but clearly not.
You have a few really brilliant, nice things to view from where you are.
You'll have to come down to Australia, clearly.
Yes, I will. I mean, I could. Uluru, is that the name?
How you pronounce Uluru?
It? Uluru. Uluru.
Uluru. Okay.
I'm not going to pronounce it. I'm not going to do the dingo stole my baby, that thing.
No, please don't.
No, Uluru would be a really cool place to go, not to climb, but to go stand next to it and then look up at the night sky.
It really is fantastic. And the actual rock. It changes color as the sun sets and the sun rises. It has so many different colors to it, and it's just fascinating to get up at 5 a.m. and just watch and see video, or if you do time-lapse video, you can actually see it changing to all these different colors as the sun rises and again as the sun sets. It's really rather a spiritual place, I would say.
Yeah, well, it is. Yes, if you're an Aboriginal, yes. If you're a native Australian, sure. And there's a reason why,
a lot of people would scale the rock, tourists, and that was stopped
yes,
because it's really kind of sacrilegious. Not that I should
say. It's a desecration. It's a desecration. That's what it is. Because I mean, that's, and there was, as I recall, there was one of your members of parliament, a lady, who just before they closed it off, she insisted on hiking up it. I think in direct defiance of the just to the thumb or nose.
Yes, yes, I vaguely remember that.
Yes, which is unfortunate. I can speak now because we have the United States of, in our Department of the Interior, which is the land management, the federal land management, and we now have a Native American lady who is in charge of it, which I'm really looking forward to. Mm. I was at a Zoom conference a few months ago, many months ago, actually, politically associated, she's from New Mexico, very intelligent woman, really solid, really level-headed, and very, very bright. But at the same time, she's has a Native American heritage. And
How are Indigenous people being treated in the United States? Is it improving?
No, I don't. I would say not. They're impoverished. There are some tribes who are doing well. The tragedy of it is, the one thing that is, by the way, her name is Deb Holland. I just was going blank on it. Now I can remember it. Mm-hmm. But she, the problem is that tribal areas, because they were they have been so abused by the federal government in many ways, in terms of the native schools, the efforts by the federal government over the years to separate the children of the tribal lands from their heritage and put them through federal schools, kind of brainwashing. I'm sure if Ronan Seagrave might be able to talk about this too, because apparently the same thing happened up in Canada.
But isn't it supposed to be going in the other direction?
It is, but there's crushing poverty in the in the reservations to greatest an extent. One of the places I really wish I was living in the United States was New Mexico rather than being in Texas, partly because I'm not allergic to New Mexico. It's a nice,
yes.
It's a nice clean desert out there. It's the poverty rate and the illiteracy rate and the other, there's no internet,
No internet.
Internet connection in the United States, broadband internet connection is already bad in the United States.
Well, you know what, Thomas, that's a segue back to space, because Elon Musk, of course, has been sending up multiple satellites make it possible to have internet in the middle of our massive deserts here in Australia and your massive deserts. And everyone's massive deserts, and it's going to be quite cheap, if not free. I mean, that's interesting, isn't it? Or is it damaging to have access to all that from a place that, you know, you might go to feel spiritual, you know?
Yes. Well, a lot of amateur astronomers are really complaining about it. There was one evening shortly after he launched one of the sets of them that I sat up in my backyard and looked up at the sky, and I saw this absurd display of satellite transits. But they were going in all sorts of directions. I mean, it was like a web being woven in the sky while I was watching it. And it was really ridiculous. And I was wondering what the hell these things were. I was waiting for them to line up and assume orbit. Some kind of orbits, there's some kind of order to it. But that night it was really weird to watch. In different directions, I didn't really understand the dynamics and the orbital mechanics of what I was watching, but I knew that was Skylink. There was an occasion a long time ago, 20-something years in the past, when I was I had the good fortune of being hanging out in New Mexico at the White Sands Missile Range, and it was you were launching the you know we're preparing these little sounding rocket payloads, which you know we can go and talk about later, but we were out there one evening at the base, and it was dead. I mean, the sky was just completely black. It was fabulous to be able to look up at it. But we were looking up at the sky, and all of a sudden we saw this flash. And it was almost like somebody had a lamp, a street lamp over us. We actually we could almost see our shadow when this thing flashed on us. And what it was back then, they had the what the satellites called the Iridium. They were the satellites that were used by various people in the field that were satellite phones. Lots of reporters used them, and there was a whole Iridium network that it was just. And that was a very primitive cellular phone network that was a satellite accessible. But every now and then, in the course of their orbit, they would catch a certain ray of the sun. And it just light up, and it was like a street lamp. It was just really bright. Wow. It was really crazy. And I don't know. I think most of those have all fallen out. I think Iridium is now it's passé, and apparently Earthlink is kicking up. But that would have to be something else, because you would be able to see them even in your skies in South Australia, because they're supposed to have the coverage. And it's just going to be, you'll always have a satellite over available, and you can always have internet access through it.
Right. Wow. You just have so much information in that brain of yours, Thomas Booker. And if you have just joined us, Thomas Booker is our correspondent in San Antonio de Bayar in Texas. It's funny that I'm talking to you about this sort of thing now, because I was actually YouTubing really pushing it on YouTube with regard to space and the possibility of life forms on planets similar to planet Earth. And one of these videos that I watched suggested that really there's a high chance that we are alone in the universe, because it was such a spectacular thing, the black hole. All of this stuff was just so unlikely. What are your thoughts on that?
We don't know enough. Once again, we've had 3,000 years worth of intellectual inquiry into the nature of physics and astronomy and biology. I mean, I would guess it would be 3,000 years worth of various scientific inquiry. Okay, so from my standpoint, life is basically chemistry. It's DNA, it's various amino acids. It's the Stanley-Urey experiment. This is another classic famous experiment that took place in the early 50s, I believe. Maybe it was the early 60s, where he had a spark gap that he put over a flask. And in the flask, it was, you know, basic elements and hydrogen and a few hydrogen and pneumonia and a few other things, but he zapped it and had it zapping continuously for months, and toward the end of it he wound up having a vat of discolored liquid that was teeming with amino acids, which he was saying creating the model of the early Earth, where there was water abounding and lightning. There were lots of lightning and lots of discharges, and over the course of the few billion years, the Earth was able to create amino acids, which initiated the combinations which wound up being creating life. And that was one mode. I don't know how highly regarded that particular experiment is, but there are other modes. They're talking about Europa, the moon of Jupiter, being a water moon, also harboring because of the gravitational process, and the fact that water is liquid under the ice on Europa. They're almost positive about that. And as a result of the water is liquid, there could possibly be life initiating chemistry in that environment.
But of course, Thomas, it just blows me away to try and think about. Let's talk about the word infinity. You know the way you look at, you know, space, millions and millions of stars, planets, mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. When see, this is an impossible question to answer. When does it stop? Does infinity exist? Like, how can it just go on forever?
The universe is not necessarily infinite. It is, you know, it basically.
But what happens after that? You don't come to a wall.
This is when you're going to have to start taking maybe.
I might have to start taking drugs.
Yeah, the Aborigines have any kind of hallucinogenic drugs that you can contact the advanced spirit world. There are, you know.
I'll keep that in mind.
I'm trying to remember the name of the movie. It was a couple of. It was a Paddy Chayefsky's script. The scientist who was searching for the origin of human consciousness, and he wound up going out and searching into Native American cultures and taking peyote and doing all of these altered states is the name of it.
Oh, I've seen that. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, a long time ago. Yeah. So that's one of the movies where, you know, and then all of it, he wound up exploring into his vast the train of his consciousness all the way back to being a proto-human and that kind of thing, which is, I'm just pointing out an absurd example.
I just want to let people know Altered States was made in 1980.
Good. Research.
William Hurt was in
William
that.
Hurt, yes.
I must watch it again. So it's not an easy question to answer.
No, it isn't.
Infinity.
No, I mean, you can drive yourself crazy sitting out there, you know.
So what do you think of people who are taking all these photographs of UFOs and that kind of thing? Like, are you for believing?
Well, okay, to tell you the truth, when I was like a 12-year-old, I used to read UFO books, all the accounts, because in the 60s, early 60s, when the flying saucers were a big thing, there were all these books about, you know, encounters with UFOs and all of that. And so I was like, a horny 13-year-old kid. Reading one of the accounts of a farmer in Brazil who was plowing his field one day, and then a flying saucer came in, landed, hypnotized him to go on board, and gassed him to the point where he went into an altered state, and then was given a bevy of 4-foot-tall alien girls, which to me sounded like paradise. And so,
yes.
There was sort of something of a quest of, boy, I could, you know, I mean, because I was a short kid, so I was thinking, you know, 4-foot-tall girls were about my size, and I was, you know, I was yearning for something like that to happen. But, you know, that was another disappointment in life that it never came to realization. The accounts of UFOs and abductees and what was it that Harlan Ellison, the science fiction writer, had to say, a famous quote, and I'll have to paraphrase it because I can't remember precisely what it was, but once an alien has come to Earth and given a proctological examination to a couple of humans, they pretty much know everything there is to know about humans. And so he was using that to discount the thought that the aliens were, you know, abducting humans and probing them and carrying out all kinds of other absurdities. There has never been any recently we have the fighter pilot video of strange objects that they were encountering during their flight, and there was some resurgence of it. There's a book 15 years ago, there was a strange disc-shaped object over an airport in, I think it was Chicago, that, you know, this huge disc rising up that everybody saw. There's supposedly there's video people took of it, but none of these ever come to anything. I mean, it could just be atmospheric phenomena that people are seeing and interpreting as intelligent craft. My favorite one, yes, was West Texas. This was back, oh gosh, early 2000s. People reporting that there was a giant UFO in West Texas and eastern New Mexico of an object that they saw, and they described it as the size of a Walmart.
There was some, okay, so it's big.
Yeah, there was some object that everybody was swearing that they saw that was flying over, you know, West Texas, and you know, it made the news. It was a big thing, and of course, you know, there was all the jokes about, you know, a flying Walmart, and that would be,
yeah, I bet there was. I bet there was heaps of jokes.
That would be how people in West Texas would have, you know, interpreted it, because Walmart was their reality. But
oh dear, how sad!
the late
great Stephen Hawking, scientist, did say that you know, people sort of romanticize like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, yeah. Steven Spielberg, 1978,
yes.
That movie. They romanticize visitors from other planets, but Stephen Hawking just went out and said they probably treat us like, you know, they might just squash us like a bug.
Well, they wouldn't even bother. There wouldn't be any reason to squash this. I mean, it's just, I mean, if you had a civilization that was able to cross space and time and the vast distances. I was just recently on Quora. I answered a question. Somebody was asking about if one of the Voyagers, how long did it take one of the Voyagers to make it to Alpha Centauri, which it was actually would have to be Proxima Centauri. That was 4.2 light years away. And I went on and used some online tools to do the math, because I'm, you know, it was really crummy at math. But so I answered back that if they were traveling at the rate that the Voyager spacecraft leaving the solar system had traveled, it would take them something like 75,000 years to reach. That's 4.2 light years. And that's the closest stellar system to us. So that's the one thing that you have to consider here, is that the distances are huge. I mean, yeah. Any civilization that would want to develop the technology to traverse those distances, I mean, they must be going to someplace useful or someplace meaningful. And then, if here we are, planet Earth, and everything we're going through right now, why would they want to visit us? I mean,
they're probably laughing at us.
Yeah. Well, if they had us, I mean, but you know, they wouldn't even bother to have a sense of humor.
And it's almost impossible to tell what kind of form they would take. We just simply don't know. You know, the thing is, I don't know. I think Stephen Hawking could be right. They might just be laughing at us, and they might just squash us, you know, like a bug. But we're out of time. I want to continue this conversation with you next week, Thomas Booker, because this is fascinating stuff.
Yeah, but, I'd like to delve into it. That would be fun.
Because we're sick of talking about politics. We're sick of talking about COVID. So it's time.
Let's take this discussion out into space and beyond.
Yes. Yes, and I'd like to thank you for the beer. That was very nice.
Yes, and that helps you get out there too.
I just need a bit more. No, but not now. I've got to interview someone in somewhere. Where am I interviewing someone next? I can't keep up. In Kingston in Jamaica, a singer in Jamaica.
Wow. Okay.
So I shall let you go. Thank you so much for talking to us here on Bondi Tunes once again, Thomas.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a pleasant cap to the day, pleasant day. So yeah, thanks, Henry. I appreciated this.
No worries. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Bondi Tunes International. It's worldwide.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and I'm delighted to have Paul and Joe Volta from the band The Sign on the line from Tasmania. How you doing, guys? Oh. You're cranky. I know.
They're cranky.
They're cranky.
I have been better, actually.
Yeah? Okay. Joe, have you been better?
Yep, definitely been better. Okay. But it's not. It could be worse. It could be worse. But this is we're getting by.
Okay, that's it. Your hour is up. It's okay. I've never been a psychologist. Look, there's a lot of stuff going on. By the way, I've just put up a video up on Facebook. It's nice and sunny in Sydney after basically 2 weeks of pouring rain, and I know that I had a friend who was in Tasmania, I think it was last weekend, and it was gloriously sunny, and I look and see that it's raining there today.
Oh yes, it's been pretty consistent.
It's not raining now.
It's getting constant. It's this, if it stays constant, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm. I know all about it.
As you've just done it, I think this is, you've sent it our way, and we're now, I know that there was a severe weather warning in place for the East Coast and for us, which is the Derwent Valley, and they're saying the River Derwent will flood, which is our river, and lucky for us, my grandparents had enough sense to build up.
Yeah,
up on the hills. We're not close. Yes. So.
Yes. Well, it's basically all going to go out to sea, and everything is circling in terms of weather all the time. now we've got a couple of serious things to talk about. Now, just to explain this, if I can, to our listeners internationally, in the last couple of months there have been numerous and multiple claims of sexual mistreatment, and even rape of a woman in Australia's Parliament House in Canberra. In Tasmania, the House Speaker MP Sue Hickey has accused a federal minister, Erica Betts, of the ruling Liberal Party of slut-shaming Brittany Higgins, who was a staff friend who claimed she was raped by Attorney General Christian Porter. Now, Sue Hickey has quoted Minister Erica Betts as saying the following: "As for that Higgins girl, anybody so disgustingly drunk who would sleep with anybody could have slept with one of our spies and put the security of the nation at risk." Joe, this is a long and twisted story from a very twisted parliament. Perhaps you'd explain this a little better, because I know that you have probably met Erica Betts in your role when you were running for a Senate seat in Tasmania.
Yes, I did. I thought he was, he's one of my least liked Liberal senators. I will say that he smacks of that pat you on the head, little woman, don't get out of, you know, don't get in the way, little woman. And women have a place in the home, and that is to basically have children and be good wives. And it's a very Christian attitude in some ways, but it's also full of misogyny. I unfortunately would have to agree with Ms. Hickey when she says she believes him to be a misogynist. I don't think I've ever known anyone to remain the same. I met him many, many, many years ago. I mean, we're talking before I turned 20, Henry, and he wasn't a very nice boy, and he isn't a terribly nice man in that way. I think she's right. Now, Brittany, was she raped by Porter or by the other staffer in the Defence Minister's office? Was it Brittany?
Brittany, she allegedly was raped by the Attorney General Christian Porter.
So this is the Christian Porter incident.
Yes.
Well, this is sort of, I mean, this is going to, this is having huge ramifications through all the parliaments, because there has been, and probably continues to be, dreadful treatment of female parliamentarians as well as staffers by males. And I think, you know, this with how any MP could say, oh, well, you were drunk, so you deserved it anyway, or basically, you know, or you could have slept with a spy and shared secrets.
Mm.
You know how you do that whole thing of going, oh my God, like, how can anybody justify saying that? Look, yes, women do get drunk, so do men.
Mm. But that's an interesting angle, isn't it?
Another ball game, and saying to someone, well, oh well, you know, and then trying to silence Miss Higgy, and then saying that, oh well, you know, we're not renewing your. We're not going to endorse you on the next election. I really don't think she needs Liberal Party endorsement, to be honest, because she was Mayor of Hobart for a very long period of time, so she's quite well known. She already has quite a good quite a good profile.
And she's a Speaker of the House, isn't she?
And she is the Speaker of the House, which was a shock. Everyone was shocked when she became Speaker.
I heard him categorically denying something.
Who? Mr.
Yeah, Abetz.
Oh, Mr. Betts. Oh, yes, he categorically denies he said this.
He does.
He's categorically denying it. He's continuing to categorically deny it. In fact, he's claiming defamation. So it could get rather interesting in the next few months. I think we're going to go to an election. I know Tassie's probably sitting very close for one.
Yeah. I just find this. I just want to repeat what I said because I did a very rushed intro because this is a huge story covering Australia in terms of our parliament and the abuse of women in Canberra, where our parliament is. And I want to quote this quote Sue Hickey again, or sorry, her quoting the Minister Erica Betts as saying, "As for that Higgins girl, anybody who's so disgustingly drunk, who would sleep with anybody, could have slept with one of our spies and put the security of the nation at risk." Now, he claims he didn't say this, but how, see, where does this go? It's not on tape. It's not been recorded. He can just say, you know, "I didn't say this," till the cows come home, surely.
Paul, absolutely. Well, he said, she said, it was said. They can probably put a time on when they were in a room together, when they were, that's traceable through Parliament cameras and CCTV at Parliament, if they were both in the building at the same time, at the time she alleges they were in the same building. But in the end, it's basically a bit of schoolyard,
he said, she said.
And unfortunately, because of his position as a Liberal senator, he is in a slightly more, I won't say more powerful position than the Speaker of our state parliament, but he certainly is sitting in a different position to her as both male and in his position of power. So, and no one's going to want to back the female Speaker who's now lost Liberal Party endorsement, so she...
Yeah.
It depends whether the other women. I think some of the other women have also got stories about Mr. Betts, and I think
they've got to come out as well.
So what may happen? He may trigger an event that he probably wishes he hadn't.
And I just want to, Paul, you're a guy. I'm a guy. I wonder what the men of Australia are thinking of this. When we see this, so much media on this, what do you think men of Australia are actually thinking? Are they thinking this is disgraceful, or are many of the men in Australia going, because we have a large section of this population of males who really are very traditional. Paul, I know you're from America. I'm from Ireland. I don't know if that matters or not. We both live in Australia. But there is a concern that men have this attitude that it's actually ingrained in our society, and Parliament just seems to be, where the action's at. Is that fair to say, Paul?
Yeah, well, look, I think it would depend on pretty much the age group. Maybe the older Aussies might think that way, but it looks like the younger snowflakes might think differently.
Snowflakes.
God help me. The guy in the the guy, and I'm seeing this guy in these commercials.
Yeah,
in the MyState commercial and Woolworth's commercial, and he wears glasses and he's skinny and he wears pants that are three quarters up his legs, and he wears like striped socks and he's like,
what a snowflake. That's all I can say is he's a snowflake.
Okay, he's typical of the 30 somethings.
Yeah, so, and of course they're more politically correct.
Exactly. Okay. So, you know, they might think I think that, you know, it's like you shouldn't do that. Anyway, there's no room for oops idiots.
Mm.
That think of females that way. You know, it's like, no, sorry, no one ever asks for it.
Is anything going to change? I mean, this is, I just wonder because there's so much media on this over the last month, 2 months, or whatever it has been. And I just wonder if it will change the culture. How far? I mean, I just want to let our listeners know that about a month or so ago, when there was a women's march in the capital, in Canberra, in the capital, outside the house, and the Minister for Women did not attend this women's march. What the hell is that about?
Was the Minister for Women a male?
No, honey.
No.
No. Well, it was a female.
I do remember years ago there was a minister for something that had to do with with women's rights. Or was with something. I don't know. I don't remember. You know, getting old, you know, my mind's gone. But anyway, there was something that there was a male.
Oh, for women's affairs in Tassie, women's
Was it?
Yeah.
And you, wait a minute. A male for women's affairs. That doesn't make sense.
It's changing. Henry, I think we're going to... Look, this has been coming for a long time. Yes. The fact that the Prime Minister did make reference that... And everyone might have taken his comment out of context, saying they're lucky they were in Australia because if they were anywhere else they would have been shot, was a little bit tough for the women who are now going where we are suitably angry enough to say there's one woman a week being murdered in Australia from domestic violence. There's this culture of, oh, well, she was drunk, she asked for it, I was in the right place, right time, or it was consensual, but she really didn't consent because she was too drunk to consent. Those sorts of arguments are falling on deaf ears as women now find, I suppose, themselves in a place where they can actually stand up and go, look, we don't want this to happen. The Me Too movement opened a lot of doors for, like, someone like my mum. Say, look, it happened in the past. Why don't you just leave it alone, walk away from it and keep walking? And that's the 80-year-old generation of nobody talked about it, and I'm pretty sure it probably was similar in Ireland.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the church was running that country.
Yeah, nobody talked about those things. And I think now with the younger generation starting to go, well, hang on, is this right? Should we talk about it? And it's been compounded because you have all the allegations against the Catholic Church, the Anglican Church, scout groups, entertainers. It's now a very prominent part of our news, if you will. So I think women are starting to go, we're not going to tolerate it anymore. And the men who were what we call beta males, or those males that sort of went, well, no, it's not all right, but all the other blokes seem to think it's okay, no one's really talking. I think the blokes now starting to stand up and go, well, we agree with the women, or our women. And we don't think it's not okay. So perhaps it's a slow burn. I think it will change. I think we'll see some change to domestic violence laws, and I think we'll see some change to family law. And I think you'll see the changes coming in. They will make policy, and I think you'll see laws, not law, but the actually the rules that govern Parliament will change. I think we'll see, you will not be able to, I mean, our Parliament is a joke as far as conversation goes. It's just, you know, they're like schoolyard bullies.
Okay, now I just want to clear up. Yes, we do have women's, a minister for women, a women's minister. Her name is Marisa Payne, and she snubbed the Women's March in Parliament on March 14th. Saying that she would prefer to take part via correspondence, which means emails. What the hell does that mean? Okay, we've got to switch subjects because we're stuck for time, and we've got another big story coming out of Tasmania, and I'm with Joe and Paul Volta in Tasmania. Now, Tasmania has passed voluntary assisted dying legislation, becoming the third state to do so. Mm. This is big news, guys, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's been a long time coming.
Oh, you both said that at the same time.
I guess we both think the same.
You are the third state. You know, I know with Tasmania, which used to be very anti-gay, where it was illegal for gay sex. I don't know how long ago that was, but surprisingly, it wasn't that long ago. And then they became ahead of everyone else in terms of, you know, how gays are seen in our society. But this, the third state, which is not bad, to allow this assisted dying, as far as I understand, Victoria's another one of those, and West Australia are the other two. What does this mean?
Well, it means for those people who maybe end-stage cancer or end-stage, you know, like in a state of dementia, that they can actually leave. I know South Australia's got a living will, but we, hopefully, you will be able to dictate how you wish to leave the mortal coil, and leave, and your wishes will be adhered to, and you can actually say to a doctor, when it gets to this point, this is what I want to happen, and that's what I'm hoping the bill reflects. That's what was mooted. Mm. You know, I was working on this in the 90s, and it's taken this long to come to fruition. So it's been a long time coming. And they're saying that we've probably got one of the best bills in the world at the moment from what I could read, for what I was reading about it. And that's, it will mean that, say, if I want to die and I'm, you know, getting, I know I'm getting sick or I'm extremely ill, that I can actually be given you know, a derivative that will allow me to pass without maintaining my life for an extra 3 or 4 years on, you know, tubing and stuff.
Do you guys, do you personally, either of you or both of you, what do you feel if you were in that position as someone who was, you know, critically ill and knew that you were going to die, would you be for this?
Oh yeah, I've told my son many times. I said, when I can't feed myself, I can't get up, I can't go to the toilet, and I can't remember what day it was yesterday. That's it, you know. Put me away. You know, give me an overdose of something, or you know, that's not a life. That's not living. It's existing. I mean, I think it's human of us to want to live and live as long as we possibly can. But when, you know, it's just...
Without a quality of life, you have to wonder as to whether that's... I mean, personally, I would not want to have that quality of life. And
it's not fair to the kids. It's not fair to anyone, really.
You know, or to those before, you know, that has to
wipe my butt and, you know, feed me you know,
you almost become like a baby again as you enter those years. I just want to quickly note a man who was 100. You guys will know about this, a big story in Australia and globally. A man who was 103 years old, living in Australia. I think he was a doctor actually, or a scientist or something. He was still of sound mind. He was not in pain. He was just bored. He just wanted to die.
And he flew
to Switzerland, or I think Geneva, I think it was, to die.
He
had to go there to die.
Yes.
Fair enough.
There have been people who have, you know, deliberately gone to a jurisdiction where it is allowable. We did have you know, there was obviously, I can't think of his name, Kokorian, or the guy that was in the, I think he was in the States. There's been a couple here, but if you were caught, it's you know, if you suicide and if you don't die, it's a crime.
Yeah, it's just, I said to my girlfriend, I said, look, this guy of 103 who flew over to Europe to die, I said, why didn't he just get a bottle of whiskey and knock the whole lot back? I mean, you kind of want, I mean, isn't that, you know, is that bad of me to say that?
No, well, perhaps he wanted to draw, it perhaps shone a light on the situation.
Yes, yes.
And I think perhaps he would have done it more to say, this is what I'm being forced into doing. I'm of sound mind, and this is, you know, this is not fair. I've reached an age where I should be able to make a decision in relation to my own body and when I leave this earth. And the problem that everyone had was, like, well, if you start giving people permission to voluntarily assist people to die, there might be a few who will voluntarily assist you when not necessarily needed. So
that's a contentious issue about all this. Look, we got to go. I want to also mention that you are from a band called The Sign. How are things going, very briefly, and also think of a song that you would like me to play at the end of this interview.
I think you should play the song that Paulie can no longer play because he can't play at the moment. He has a pinched nerve, which is preventing him from playing guitar. So for the last three months, he's been unable to actually play. So I've cancelled 7 or 8 shows.
Oh, my God.
And we've got a few things coming up online. That's what's happened. So a piece of 2x4 would have fixed the problem, I reckon, Henry.
How long?
Dying.
Oh, dear. How long will it take to get playing?
I don't know. I'm going to see a specialist to discuss the options. Some say, you know, it might go away on its own, but my discs, according to the MRI, are pretty not very good. You know, so the one that's C7, C8, that's got the pinched nerve, so it affects my little finger and ring finger.
Right.
It affects the nerve that goes all the way down there, and maybe a little bit of C6, and then some of the other discs are pretty degenerated.
Yeah,
because
that word.
Yeah.
Well, look, I do wish you the best with that, because it's just a terrible thing to happen to a musician, a guitar player, obviously. Okay, look, let's get a song which we're about to play. What are we about to play, guys?
I remember.
Okay, they remember. Thanks to Joe and Paul Volter from The Sign. Go to thesign.com, thesign.com. You can hear all their music and a plethora of other places that they're available on the web. You know where to go. This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
One eye open now, one eye shut. Can't see the sun, the clouds blocked it out. Can't breathe the air, can't drink the water. You don't care, you just don't care. I remember you left me there. I remember. Do you care? Do you care? One eye open now, one eye shut. The door is closed, they all got out. Can't drink the water, can't breathe the air. Everybody left, there's nobody there. I remember you left me there. I remember you just don't care. You just don't.
Thanks to our correspondents, Joe and Paul Volta in Tasmania, and to our other correspondents broadcasting for us around the world here on Bondi Tunes International. A word about our website. It's really a podcast site. It's bonditunes.podbean.com. B-O-N-D-I, tunes.podbean, P-O-D-B-E-A-N.com. You can hear all our shows, including our music show, on demand from that podcast site. Okay. See you next week. Bye-bye.
sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.